All right, good morning, everyone. Good morning. Thank you, everyone, for coming out. That's the mayor for our town. This year is generally dedicated by Ariel and Eddie Weiss in memory of Ariel's mother, Cicely Etchia, and the program overall is dedicated in memory of Rav Pesach ben Avraham Moshe HaKohen. So I would like to discuss, beginning on page 14, the story which is found in through the end of Megillat Ruth about Pliny Almoni, this fellow Pliny Almoni we meet, and some of his actions, and for that matter his name, is somewhat shrouded in mystery. So we're actually streaming this live on Facebook Live, and I saw as I was setting this up that there was a person with the username Pliny Almoni who liked this, so hopefully he'll continue to like this after we finish. But, if you're watching, welcome. So just a little background about Pliny Almoni. When we get to this part, we first find him really in chapters 3 and 4 in allusion to chapter 3 and really explicitly in chapter 4 in the book of Ruth. And the background is we're continuing in the book of Judges, which is pre-monarchy in Israel. And what's happened up until this point is Elimelech, who's a wealthy man, goes in a time of famine, leaves Eretz Israel and is criticized for abandoning the rest of the Jewish people, goes to Moab, and his sons marry, Machlon and Chilion marry Moabite women, Ruth and Orpah. So Elimelech and his two sons die. Afterwards, Orpah returns to her people, to Moab, and Ruth heroically stays with her mother-in-law Naomi and attaches herself to the Jewish people. And because Machlon, Ruth's husband, died before he and Ruth had any children, so therefore Machlon's closest relative had a responsibility to what the Megillah refers to as redemption, to redeem her, basically perform a form of a levirate marriage, and in order to perpetuate Elimelech's name through Machlon. And at this point in chapter 3, we're introduced to Boaz, a nephew of Elimelech, a son of Elimelech's brother, and a cousin of Machlon. And we find that there's potential for him to be this redeemer, to marry Ruth and perpetuate the name. However, the Tanakh tells us that someone else may be more eligible, and really, in this context, we are introduced to Pliny Almoni. So we first find the explicit mention of Pliny Almoni in the beginning of chapter 4. Source 1 says, Uboaz Allah Hashar v'yashav sham, that Boaz, meanwhile, had gotten up to the gate and sat down there. V'nei ha-goel over asher diber Boaz, and the goel about whom Boaz had spoken, and we'll see in a few sources later, the leading up to this, but this Goel, this redeemer who came, David Boaz, Yomer Suru Shapo, Pliny Almoni, the Yasar the Yeshit. And Boaz invited him over. He said, sit down here, Pliny Almoni, and then Pliny Almoni sat down. So who is this Pliny Almoni? What does the name Pliny Almoni mean? So commonly referred to, right, we view it as kind of a John Doe type of name, right? It's not, we usually understand it, it's not someone's actual name, but refers to some sort of anonymity. And Rashi explains this in source 2. He is Pliny Almoni, Miturgam, the Aramaic translation, says, Kasi v'tamir, that concealed and secret. Now you also see that Pliny has the connotation of covered and concealed, as we find in other places. So this suggests that either it's not his name, that his name is shrouded in mystery, or that we find as a general concept that someone's name tells something about themselves. And actually, the Medrash will quote both opinions. So we mentioned Boaz was eligible and seemed to be in line for redeeming Ruth to marry her and to perpetuate the lineage. But before he does, he suggests that there's someone who may be more eligible than he is. He says, source 3, Vataki amnam kim goel anokhi v'gam yesh goel karov mimen. Now, it's true that I'm a redeemer. I'm a relative of Elimelech. But there's a person, there's another person who is closer than I am. Remember, Boaz is a nephew of Elimelech, and he says that there's someone else who is closer than he. And then the next verse it says, so Boaz tells Ruth to stay the night, Lina halayla vaya baboker, and in the morning, im yigalech tov yigal. So literally what it means, if he will redeem you, tov, good. That's what we know for now. That seems to be the simple meaning of the verse. If this person, if this closer relative will redeem you, that would be good. And if he doesn't want to redeem you, then I will redeem you. I will marry you. So the commentaries pick up on this use of the word tov, imigalech tov, if he redeems you, good. So the Eitz Rabbah, commentary to the Medrash on the Book of Ruth, quoting one opinion, says, what does it mean, tov? In source 5, tov hu lekosh yigal sha'adam chashavu. It'll be good for you if he redeems you, because he's a distinguished person. So it sounds like tov is describing something about him. He's good. He's a distinguished person. If he's willing to do it, if he's willing to redeem you, it will be beneficial for you. However, Rashi in source 6, really quoting or taking into account another opinion, the Medrash, says, what does it mean, tov? How do we understand this tov? He quotes the opinion of Yeshua ben Levi, who says, in Elimelech's family, there were three brothers. There were Salmon, Elimelech, and Tov. So Tov, says, was actually his name. So he did have a name. We know his name, right? But it's not mentioned. Here he has a name. We mentioned the other names, but we don't mention his name. Anything, there's merely some sort of allusion to it, but it's certainly not mentioned in the Megillah itself. So really, as Elimelech's brother, so he's a closer relative, so really, this gentleman Tov should have been the one to redeem her. And who's Tov? Tov is the one who's referred to as Ploni Amoni. And because he was first in line to redeem her, so Boaz offers him, first he tells Ruth that to wait until she sees Ploni Amoni / Tov the next day. And when they encounter Ploni Amoni, so Boaz offers him the opportunity. So Boaz says in source 7, he says, then Boaz said, the day you buy the field from Nomi was his mother-in-law, Elimelech's widow, you must also buy it from Ruth the Moabite, wife of the deceased, to perpetuate the name of the deceased on his inheritance. So what did Ploni Amoni say? He said that I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I imperil my own inheritance. He's worried about his offspring. For some reason, he thinks that it's not good for him. So he tells Boaz, take over my redemption responsibility on yourself, for I am unable to redeem. So why do you think Ploni didn't want to redeem Ruth? What was he worried about?
He'll create another firstborn.
He will create and therefore?
And therefore that firstborn will be entitled to inheritance.
So that he won't really be, it's similar to Er and Onan, the first people who were involved in levirate marriage, that he was worried that this descendant won't really be considered his. It'll be the continuation of Elimelech. That's one possibility.
But it'll be his own firstborn. And therefore,
it'll be his own, but then he's
greater inheritance.
Right. It could be.
There's a prohibition against marrying Moabites, and that if he
he does that, he's going against the halakha.
Right, right. So, and you see Boaz emphasizes that. He says, the day you buy the field from Naomi, you must also buy it from Ruth the Moabite. So maybe if you didn't know that, it'll be like, okay, you know, this is a mitzvah to do. I'll do it. But he hears Ruth the Moabite. He's like, well, I can't do that. That'll imperil my own inheritance. Because the Torah says that you're not allowed to, at least at this point, we'll assume you're not allowed to marry someone from Moab. If you do so, you may not be able to marry into the Jewish people. He says, I don't want to do this. And on the second page, on page 15, so he actually says this, the Medrash records that he actually had said this explicitly. So according to one opinion, his name was Pliny Almodi, and he was Tov, and it's described, keep in mind, he's considered a good guy. But Shul Bar Nachman says he was a mute, he was an Elam, from similar to Almoni, with regard to the laws of the Torah, right? He thought that Ruth the Moabite, I can't get involved with this. And he said, even more so, I don't even have to just think far-fetched in the future, maybe something will happen. You saw what happened to Ruth's first husband. He said, Mahlon and Chilion, they took Moabite women, they took Ruth and Orpah, and look what happened to them. Think I want the same thing to happen to me? I have no interest in this. He says, I'm going to go take her. He says, this is in source 8, heaven forfend that I should take her. I will not muddle my offspring. I will not intermingle disqualified ones with my children. But what didn't he know? He didn't know what we see in sources 9 and 10. The Torah says, as was pointed out, Lo yavo amoni moavi bekal Hashem. An Ammonite or Moabite may not shall not enter the congregation of Hashem. Gam medor asiri lo yavo lahem bekal Hashem ad olam. And not even in the 10th generation. The 10th generation really refers to for all times, like it says with the Mamzer. So, but what didn't he know? Apparently he didn't know the following. In source 10, the Talmud says, Amoni, right? It says, Lo yavo Amoni umoavi bekal Hashem. But what is the... When the Torah was given, so you have the Torah Shebechtav, the written Torah, but we also have the Torah Shebaalpeh, which explains and expounds upon the laws. So what did he know? It said, Amoni velo Amonis, Moabi velo Moabis. That it says, an Amoni and a Moabi can't come into the congregation of Hashem, but it comes to exclude a Ammonite woman and a Moabite woman. So apparently he wasn't so knowledgeable in the Torah to know that the prohibition was limited to the men and the men from Moab and not to the women. And in some ways this was understandable, because apparently if you go back to source 8, the Medrash says in the middle of the second line of the Hebrew, he says, the Medrash says, V'lo haya yodea shekvar niskacha halacha, that he didn't know that literally that this law was innovated. Now, of course, if we have this understanding of the verse, so that really goes back to Har Sinai, but apparently this hadn't been relevant or hadn't come to light. So he didn't know. He apparently didn't know this limitation on the prohibition, and that's why he didn't want to get involved. Now, the Brisker of Rav Yitzchak Zev Soloveitchik, so he pointed out something. He says, okay, maybe even if he didn't know, but Boaz was a big scholar of the generation. Boaz was coming to him and saying, you should do this. So he did a little bit of research, maybe he could have found out that why is Boaz telling him that he could do this? Because maybe the prohibition wasn't as expansive as he thought. So the Brisker Rav suggests that maybe Tov/Pliny Almoni didn't know. He was aware of the fact that this was the current ruling, but he was worried that maybe a future Beit Din would overturn the ruling. So that's why he said that. So that's why he said, you go back to source 7, he says that hen ashvit es nachalati ba'atav, so lest I damage my own inheritance. So not that he was worried about himself. He didn't say, you know, lest I violate this prohibition, lest I go against the Torah, but no, lest I negatively impact my offspring. So maybe he was really worried, not about himself, but what would happen to his offspring. And essentially, that there's a great irony here. What was he concerned about? He's concerned about his name, right? This whole discussion is about perpetuating a name. Boaz was telling him, Boaz understood that he needed to perpetuate Elimelech's name and Mahlon's name, and he gave him the opportunity. The whole idea was to perpetuate a name. And what was Pliny concerned about? He's concerned about his name. It was precisely what he was concerned about, but we see that his name isn't mentioned. So there's really a great irony here. And when Pliny Almoni refuses the opportunity to redeem Ruth, to marry her, and to carry on the lineage, so Boaz wants to make sure that it's understood that he's doing the right thing, and there could be no doubt about the fact that this was a proper interpretation of the law. It says in source 11, Vayomer Boaz l'zakenim. So Boaz said to all of the elders, V'chol ha'am edim atem hayom, that all the people, you are my witnesses today. Kenisi es kol asher l'Elimelech, that I've acquired all that is Elimelech's through his son. Ares kol asher l'chilion u'machlon v'yad nami, and everything that was his son's from Naomi. The gamas rus ha'moaviyah. So just like he emphasizes the fact that she's a Moabite to Pliny Almoni, to Tob, so he tells us in view of the whole people, I've acquired Ruth the Moabitess. Sounds like he's really showing everyone that, you know, I'm doing the right thing. To understand that the prohibition is limited to male Moabites and not to female ones. Ashes Machlon Panisi Loli Shah, Lakim Shem Hames, acquired my right to preserve the shame hames al nachlaso, the name of the deceased on his heritage. So I am here to announcing again, emphasizing this name. I am here to preserve the name, to carry on the name, lo yikiresh shem hames mi'im echam, so that the name of the deceased will not be obliterated. Mishar mekomo edem atem hayom, and you are witnesses to me on this day. So we see he's emphasizing, one, the correctness of it. He's also emphasizing the name. I am here to perpetuate the name. And we see that this took a lot of courage on Boaz's behalf. In fact, the commentaries say that there were a lot of rumors surrounding this act of Boaz. In fact, even in the times of David, their descendant, that there were questions about his lineage. Not every people still talked about it. But we see that Boaz was saying, in view of all the people, that what I'm doing is correct. I am taking Ruth the Moabitess as a wife, and I am doing it to perpetuate the name. And what do we see? The book of Ruth closes really with a list of names. It seems like it goes out of its way to give a genealogy. He says, these are descendants to the generations of Peretz, the son of Yehuda and Tamar, and Chetzron begat Ram, and Ram and Minadav and Nachshon and Salma. So we're already up to Salma. So Salmon was Elimelech's brother, and then Salma to Boaz. Boaz to the Obed, Obed to Yishai, and Yishai to David. So who's missing? Pliny or Tov, right? We have Salmon, and we have Boaz. We don't have. It could have been Tob. It could have been him, and then he could have been the ancestor of David, and by extension, really the great grandfather of Mashiach. He could have been there. He could have been listed, but in the end, again, there's an irony that because of this act, Boaz's name was recorded for all generations, and Tob, who was so concerned with his name, was so concerned with his progeny, not only is not quoted in the genealogy of David, because he didn't end up establishing the genealogy, he's not quoted anywhere. He's completely left out. So again, this concern of, and really almost obsession with having a good reputation, undermined the goal that he was trying to achieve. And I think we see this, I think this is an important lesson in our own lives, that there's a tendency that those who pursue honor ultimately, aren't necessarily the ones who gain honor. Many times it's those who don't pursue honor who are the ones whose actions really, really earn them that. And I think we see from Boaz, and this is pointed out in the Medrash in Source 12. The Medrash asks the question, why is Ruth really included in Tanakh? So it says it's not really a legal book. I guess there are other books that aren't purely legalistic either. But it says, Rabbi Ze'era, why was Rabbi Ze'era said, Megillah Zu Ein Ba'lo Tuma. This doesn't tell us about ritual impurity, below tahara, not ritual purity, below iser, below heter, not about prohibitions and things that are permitted. Lama niftava. So why was it written? Lametcha kama skar tov legomlei chasadim. To tell us what the reward is for those who engage in loving kindness. That's really the whole message of the book. And it's a message and it's something, it's reflective of what Ruth did. Ruth joined her mother-in-law and joined the Jewish people. And it also reflects what Boaz did. That Boaz, even after putting his own reputation on the line, was willing to continue the line of his late uncle, and did this really as a kindness. And this teaches that really it's our job to do the right thing. And this will eventually lead to a good name, and at least where it counts. So we go back to Pliny's mistake, that he was so worried about his name that eventually he lost it, and he gave up the opportunity to be the grandfather of Mashiach and do a kindness. And he was told he was a good guy, but ultimately he forfeited the opportunity to be great.